We're continuing with our discussion of the Shishastika prayers, Shishitani Mahaprabhu, eight prayers of Shiksha, instructions, how to chant the holy name of the Lord. So we'll do as we usually do, we'll just recite together the verses. Just in Sanskrit, rather. And then this evening we'll look at text 3. Maybe we'll go as far as 4, I don't know. We have two classes tomorrow, finishing off with the beginning ones in some ways are more pertinent. Okay, so let's chant. Does everyone have a copy of it? If you're not familiar with this, I want to point out to everybody that this translation is from this Chaitanya Charitamrita. The very last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita is called the Shishastika Prayers. Lord Chaitanya is reciting these prayers and also sometimes giving a little discussion about them in Bengali. The prayers are, of course, in Sanskrit. And Prabhupada translated them like this from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is a different translation from the one we often say in the morning, which is one that Prabhupada put in the Bhagavatam, the introduction to the Bhagavatam. And in some ways these are more precise translation. And I prefer them. Also the one we say in the morning, there's a mistake in the Sanskrit. It's taror iva, sahishnuna, not taror api. As everyone, as people say. I was always wondering how people always said that, because it's wrong in the songbook. That doesn't make any difference, but anyway, if you're a nitpicker like me, you know. So let's say them together. Chito jaya paramarjanam bhavamahadavami yuvatam sreyaya chandika hitranam vidyavadu jivanam anandam vidyavadanam prakitadam bhutam tashvaranam sarvatmasnapatam param vijayate sukrishna sankirtanam nandam kari bhagavati chasara vishaktis So as we've been discussing, the first, just a little review, the first of these prayers prays for the victory of Sankirtan, meaning the achievement of complete and perfect chanting of the holy names of the Lord, and not necessarily the triumph of ISKCON. That would be a superficial. But it's not a political question. It's a question of achieving Sankirtan. Sankirtan means complete chanting. It also means chanting together, but it also means complete, thorough, intense, or perfected chanting, which always happens. It can only happen in the association of devotees. So here, when there's the victory of Sankirtan, there are seven benedictions. And all these benedictions are the modifiers of the word Sankirtan. Chetadarpana Marjanam, it cleanses the mirror of the mind. Navamaha Bhavagni Nirvapanam, it destroys the blazing fire of material existence. Sriyakaita Vachandika Vitaranam, is the moonshine that makes the night blooming white lotus of good fortune open up. So it's the Sanskrit's nice, you can put all those things in a few words, but there's the lotus that blossoms at night under the moonlight. It's the white lotus. And when it opens up under the moonlight, its fragrance fills the atmosphere. So this lotus is good fortune. So all good fortune comes. Good fortune means one loses one's taste for life in the material world and gains a taste for chanting the holy name. Vidyavadu Jivanam, again, this is a compressed, very compressed metaphor. Vidya, which is the transcendental knowledge by which we can see Krishna, is like a vadu, means a bride or a young wife. And so the holy name is like the bridegroom who enlivens the bride of Vidya. So she comes to life and awakens, and therefore we are given the descent of the internal potency so that we can appreciate the holy name. Sanandam Bhuti Vardhanam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the jiva is very tiny, but his bliss is ever increasing. His bliss is not tiny. It's rather like an ocean that keeps on ever increasing, such that at every step of the way, there's a taste of the cool nectar. And in other words, it goes on and on, increasing. Sarvatma Snapanam Param. Sarvatmasnapanam means it is the bath of the soul. Complete bath of the soul for everyone. The bath of the soul means is that when there's achievement of the victory of the Sankirtan movement, there is absolutely no contamination whatsoever, no selfish desires for anything, only the pure desire to serve Krishna. So these are the benedictions that come from there is the chanting of the holy names. So if the holy name is so great, then in the next verse, Nam Nam Akari, he now reflects about this greatness of Sankirtan, that your names, that the Lord is so merciful, that first of all, he's manifested all kinds of names, various names, and in the names, Nitya Sarva Shaktis, all his personal potencies are in those names. So very liberal, very magnanimous, spreading these names out all over the world and with all these potencies. And Niyamita Smaranena Kala, and there are no very restrictive rules and regulations for chanting them, nor restrictions of time. It's like you chant Gayatri three times a day, at sunrise, at noon, and at dusk. There's particular times. And, you know, you're supposed to sit down and do achman, you have to be an initiated Brahmin. There's so many rules and restrictions about it. The holy name, very liberal. All those things are there. Etad tava kripa Bhagavan. This is your mercy. Etad vishu tava kripa. Kripa means mercy, O Lord. This is your mercy. And then, mama pitu adayam iti samaha janinara raga. However, I am so durdaiva, unfortunate, that in me the attachment or the taste for chanting doesn't arise, isn't born. So here he says, although here is indicated that there's a problem, that the holy name is there, all benedictions are there, but somehow or other, something's gone wrong. Because of this misfortune, I don't have an attraction for the holy name. The misfortune means, according to the acharyas, I commit offenses while chanting the holy names. So even though niyamataha, there's no hard and fast rules and restrictions of time and so on, still one has to chant while trying to give up offenses. This is the process. This is sadhana. To chant while trying to give up offenses. And so that mood has to be there. Bhaktivinoda Thakura, I'm basing most of this on this book here. With an anguished heart full of contrition, the chanter should become eager to chant continuously, for this alone will uproot his previous offenses and also protect him from committing further offenses. So this mood has to be there, that I recognize that I'm committing offenses. I feel really bad about it. This duodaya vimitvishamiha janinana raga, this is like a lament. This is a lament. We should lament this misfortune, and we should make every effort that we can to now to become free from offenses. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, if we chant in this way, with an anguished heart, full of contrition, that is, we are sorry, with a desire to be able to chant the holy name continuously, here he's looking forward to the next verse when he mentions this, then that will uproot our previous offenses and keep us from committing future ones. Now in the Bhajana Rahasya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur associates a different stage in the sequence from Shraddha to Prema with different of these prayers. So the first one, which describes the glories of chanting the holy name, is Shraddha, Adau Shraddha. First of all, there should be Shraddha. So that one should be at least convinced that this is the, I should have faith. Lord Chaitanya says, if you chant, if Sankirtan has its victory, then these are the benedictions that will come. So one should, first of all, have confidence in that. Then the next one, where he describes this, Durdaya Vimitvisa Mahajaninana Vaga, this takes us through Anartanivritti. So all those things, Sadhu Sangha, we've already mentioned how the chanting has to take place. Sankirtan means an association with devotees. So there's Sadhu Sangha. And Bhajana Kriya means I'm taking up the process. And then if I do, like he says there, I have a feeling of regret and humility that Lord Chaitanya exhibits, then the anarthas will go away. So this is the mood of anarthanivritti. Of the removals of the offenses in chanting. So then the Sloka 3, Finata Pisumiche Nantarori Vasahishtuna, Amanina, Nanadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. In the Bhajana Rahasya, this represents the stage of Nishta, fixed. Or Prabhupada like to say, fixed up. One is now fixed. And these are the conditions under which one becomes fixed in chanting. There are four characteristics in being on the stage of Nishtha. Nishtha means the offenses have pretty much disappeared. There's the analysis of these stages is here in the Madhurya Kandambini. In the beginning, our practice is unsteady, anishtita. And then, after we go through an anartha vritti, then it becomes nishtha. He gives here a different kinds of unsteadiness. It's an interesting, recognizable list. Where is his list? I'll find it in a second. What's that list? Anyway, just a second. The first one, which is unmistakable. Here we go. He calls it Utsaha Mayi. These are one of the characteristics of unsteadiness. Here's his description of Utsaha Mayi. A Brahmana child, having just begun study of the scriptures, has immediately become a learned scholar worthy of everyone's praise. Similarly, a person just beginning devotional service may have the audacity to think he has mastered everything. This is called Utsaha Mayi, or filled or puffed up with enthusiasm. This to me describes the first 20 years of ISKCON pretty accurately. Utsaha Mayi. Because then you crash, then you make a little more advanced, then you become really puffed up now in advanced devotee, then you commit offenses, then you crash. And so people can be in this cycle for some period of time. Ganga Tarala means thick and thin. The same child at times diligently engages in his studies, yet at other times due to inability to understand the scriptures, or lack of real taste, is negligent. In the same way, a new devotee will sometimes practice the different forms of devotional service and other times neglect them. So on again, off again. This is called Gana Tarala. The next characteristic, next kind of unsteadiness is called Vyuta Vikalpa. Now he goes on with Vyuta Vikalpa for several pages because he just gets into somebody's mind. On the one hand, shall I live my life in family life, making my wife and children Krishna conscious and worshipping the Lord? Oh, shall I give them all up and go to Vrindavan and perfect myself by engaging full time in hearing and chanting with no distractions? And then so he says, so on the one hand, he thinks of all the scriptural quotes on this hand, the other side again. He has the other scriptural quotes, he goes back and forth, back and forth. So this is the extensive speculation, vacillating all the time between renunciation and household life. Vishaya Sagara means sometimes getting carried away forcibly by material enjoyment. Many times his attempt at renunciation often ends in enjoying what he's trying to renounce. Struggle with sense pleasure. Niyamanakshama means inability to improve his devotional service. The first one, the previous one, Vishaya Sagara, Sangha, the inability to give up sense enjoyment, and the niyamakshama, the inability to improve devotional service. And then finally, taranga rangani, to enjoy the facilities that one is sometimes given through devotional service. Bhakti produces the opportunity for material gain, worship, and position. These are weeds. So if you enjoy these things, that's another sign of unsteadiness. So that's this characterization of unsteadiness. When one has become steady, these things are gone. He says steadiness, nishta, means that five obstacles have been overcome. Sleep, distraction, indifference or disinterest in spiritual topics, tendency toward bad habits, and taste for material enjoyment. These things are gone. So fixed means this process is described also in Bhagavatam. Shrinvata Sokata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtana. So here we have the very beginning. One begins hearing and chanting Krishna glories, Punya Sravana Kirtana. And Pridyantasto Hyapadrani Nidinoti Suritsitam. And the inauspicious things in the heart begin to disappear. This is an artadirvitti, takes place in nasta prayeshu apatreshu. These inauspicious things are just not destroyed completely. It says almost destroyed, because as we discussed a few days ago, even after nishta, there's still some. After an artadirvitti and nishta has been saved, there's still some ways to go, but almost completely, the anarthas have been destroyed. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavat Uttama Shloke, Bhaktir Bhavati, Naishtiki. Naishtiki is the same word as Nishta. He's attained Nishta. And Tada Rajastamo Bhava Kama Loba Dayasche Cheta Etaranavitam Siddham Satve Prasidati. As soon as irrevocable, we should try to say that right, by the way. Not irrevocable, but irrevocable, if we can remember that. So somebody may be listening. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust and greed, disappear from the heart. The devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. This is nishta. So this is described, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in this Trinadvati Sunichena. These are four characteristics that are given of a person who is now passed through anartha nirvritti. This is the mood that the traits that one should see and try to cultivate them. Trinadvati. Trina means either straw or blades of grass, like Trinavarta, who carries the straw, that demon, you know, in a whirlwind, the straw goes up, you know, Trina. This is a Trina, same Trina, Trina Api, like the straw or like the downtrodden grass, Sunicha, Sunichena, being lower than the straw, right? Lower than the grass, and then Taror Iva, like the tree, he's tolerant, Sahishnuna. Next best, so lower than the straw, the grass, tolerant, more tolerant than a tree, Amanina means without mana. Mana means pride. So without pride, and manadhena. Amanada means, say, amanina means without expecting respect for yourself, but manada, giving respect to other people. So that's the fourth quality. Kirtane sadahari. Then in this case, one can always chant the name of Krishna. That's still under those conditions. Huh? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the devotee who chants the holy name offensively is adorned with four very special qualities. One, a natural meekness and humility because of his complete detachment from matter. Notice he relates his humility to detachment from matter. So we'll discuss why he says it like that. Two, a pure compassion unencumbered by envy. That's the tree. The grass is this natural meekness and humility. The word natural is very nice, actually. It's not unnatural. We don't have to talk ourselves into being humble. It's there. That's all. And he proves it, actually. We'll see. Three, a spotless heart free from mundane false prestige. And four, a respectful attitude towards everyone. Now, this humbler than a gray blade of grass, he says that we should, he gives us this meditation. How can we think of ourselves as humbler than a blade of grass? He says, because of the bodily conception of life, we're all in the human form of life. So we have this human body and this human mind. So identifying with those, we get puffed up. We look at the grass and other things and say, you know, at least I'm not a blade of grass. But he says, although grass is matter, its ego is natural and proportionate to it. Whereas my false ego, made of my gross and subtle bodies, is utterly illusory because it is not connected to my original spiritual self. It is only proper, therefore, that I become more humble than a blade of grass. So you can think of this, the spirit soul is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size. Very, very tiny. And how many spirit souls are there? Uncountable souls, and very, very tiny. So actually, the body of a blade of grass is more natural and proportionate, befitting a body for the soul, than is even this human body. So we should think like that, that actually it's really proportionate and natural. That's the way it should be. But we've identified with this body, and with this mind, and so now we've acquired this false ego and this big idea about ourselves that I'm important and so on. So this meditation, the blade of grass, one should actually get that lesson in humility from the, you know, the feedback from the grass is this is you. So, now, people have asked the question, how do I become humble? Well, this kind of a meditation will help. But the thing is if one actually chants the holy name while trying to give up offenses, especially during japa, attending to the offensive inattentiveness, and therefore pays the holy name, the courtesy of attention, and we come into contact with at least the dawning twilight of the holy name, of Namabhas, humility will begin to develop. It's just part of the... When you come into contact with Krishna, you start to feel humble. Prabhupada said once, Don't be puffed up. Remember, you're dealing with Krishna. So you can see if we're puffed up, it's because we've forgotten Krishna. Once we're in contact with Krishna, and remember Krishna's position and our position, you've got to be humble. So pride is the sign of having forgotten Krishna. So if we actually come into contact with Krishna through the holy name, humility will begin to develop. If one comes into contact with the holy name, one begins to feel remorse for having forgotten Krishna, for having turned away, for having come to the material world. This mood of lamentation that we see in the previous verse, durdaivam, is very painful, but as we said this morning, this is a healing pain. It's a good pain that one should regret. Why have I turned away from Krishna? Why have I come to enjoy the material world? How could I commit such a crime? One feels bad about oneself, though. This can also lead one to say, all these things will naturally happen if we are chanting the holy name in a proper way. That is, we are chanting while very diligently trying to give up offenses. It will come of its own accord. If it doesn't, then we should look and see, what am I doing wrong? But just contact with the holy name gradually makes us become humble. Now, people who can't, who are so fragile that they're afraid of being humble, then maybe that's one of the obstacles in their chanting. Because I mean, being puffed up is a huge unnecessary garbage. I mean, a false ego is just so much junk you don't need that we're carrying around, convinced that we need it. We need it to protect ourselves. Against whom and for what? Does it work? Whatever it is, no. But we're afraid to give it up. We're actually afraid. So when you come into contact with the holy name, you come into contact with Krishna, that fear begins to go away, and then you start to think, wait a minute, I don't need this. It just gets in my way. I'm dragging this thing around. And it's unnecessary. Absolutely unnecessary. It doesn't do me any good whatsoever. That's why it's called anartha. It's something you don't want. But unfortunately, all these things we don't want, we don't need, we think we have to have them. And so when we start to divest ourselves of these unwanted things, we become naturally think of ourselves as very small in comparison with Krishna. But we don't have to defend ourselves or protect ourselves against anything. After all, this is our spiritual position. We've got there's no threat. The threat only comes from the material energy, which cannot hurt us. Yeah, the body, you know, give it up. It's going to go anyway, one way or another. Don't worry about it. So these things just will occur in the due course of time. So this is a sign of some advancement in Krishna consciousness. This, as we said, it's a natural humility. I don't have to get up and every day talk to myself, yeah, okay, you know, it's true, you know, I'm a white American Anglo-Saxon Protestant, I have a PhD, I have this, I have that, you know, now I gotta convince myself that I'm humble, even though I won the Nobel Prize and this and that, you know. You don't need to go, it's natural. So this comes from the result of chanting. Now to explain the real purport of Toror Iva Sahishnuna, more tolerant than a tree. The tree is considered tolerant because it never neglects to offer its cooling shade and succulent fruits even to the woodcutter who's going to cut it down. The devotee of Lord Krishna is kinder still because he's compassionate to every living entity, whether friend or foe, desiring only their highest welfare. One who chants offenselessly is overwhelmed with thoughts of others' well-being. Thus the second special quality, compassion without envy, is being described. So notice how these two things in this tree example, they go together. So when the woodcutter comes to cut the tree down, first of all, the tree doesn't protest. And before he cuts the tree down, the woodcutter takes some fruit, eats it, sleeps in the shade, then cuts it down. And the tree just gives the fruit, gives the shade. So this is the example. This compassion to everyone, and without envying the person, doesn't hate the person even if he's a foe or an enemy. So this is the second second thing. Then freedom from false prestige, amani, a spotless heart free from false ego and false prestige. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says to completely reject these false designations is to have a spotless heart, devoid of mundane ego and false prestige. He who, in spite of having every reason to be proud, demonstrates tolerance, humility, and a spotless heart, is a fit candidate to chant purely. A devotee of Krishna, whether he's a Brahmana living in the house, must subdue the pride of being a Brahmana, and if he's living a renounced life in the forest, must conquer the supercilious attitude, careful to avoid becoming proud of being Brahma, of being a renunciate, a Brahmana. So this is the other, and then manada, meaning to offer all respect to others. You don't expect anything for yourself, and willing to give it to others. That's the other side of it. Very glad to have the opportunity to offer respect for others. He understands that all living entities are eternal servants of Lord Krishna, so he's never envious of anyone. The word envious, the way that the word envy is used in Indian English, means inimical or hostile. You know, generally in the English that we speak, envy means to want something that someone else has. But you can see most of the time Prabhupada uses envy to mean just sort of inimical or hostile. That's the standard way it's used in India. That's a, sort of a separate dialect, or I don't know what the right word is in linguistics, of English. So they have their own way of their own vocabulary sometimes. So this, so when it says envy, it means, doesn't mean that you, you know, in English there's envy, which you want what somebody else has, and there's jealous, which means you're trying to keep what you have from other people getting it. We have that, those special senses. And so this is not envious of others. It means that he simply has a well-wishing attitude toward everybody, whether they're a friend or they're a foe. So these are, and this commentary is taken from what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says when he discusses this in the Shishastikam. These are the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, although he is very exalted. He thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground, and like a tree, he tolerates everything in two ways. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest, and even when drying up, it does not ask anyone for water. The tree delivers its fruits and flowers and whatever else it possesses to anyone and everyone. It tolerates scorching heat and torrents of rain, yet still gives shelter to others. You notice that when we're well off, it's easy to be charitable. But as soon as we have problems of our own, we've got no time for anybody else. So the real person who has time for other people, their material or even their psychological problems, even though I have problems of my own, that's really shows this attitude so here. Even the tree, even when it's itself too much rain or heat or whatever, still gives shelter to other people. Doesn't say, you know, wait till I'm okay, then I'll take it, I'll worry about you. It's an interesting characteristic. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he's prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. If one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. So this is his commentary on Lord Chaitanya's discussion of that particular verse of the in the Shishastikam. So this is these are the qualities, and I think that the main thing is that one really has to be careful in chanting, to follow the process, and then these things will gradually become manifest of their own accord, and one will actually become steady or fixed. Let me see. When he mentions the steadiness, he mentions these things, this sleep. These first three things that Vishnu Chakravarti mentions as qualities of unsteadiness are the three things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur characterizes as three kinds of inattentiveness: laya, sleep. Like if we're chanting japa, there's a tendency to fall asleep. That's one form of inattentiveness. The other, vishepa, distracting toward mundane topics while doing devotional service. So we're trying to fix our mind on the holy name, and we start thinking of other things, distraction. And then finally, pratipatti, still a kind of inability to have any intensity or any enthusiasm, even though I'm paying attention, and even though I'm not falling asleep. Still, I'm not all that interested, and I still kind of have to really push myself. And so we discussed this morning, first of all, once you get some sleep, so when the mind wanders, one has to bring it back and keep struggling with this tendency until we become fixed. And then as far as intensity, this requires some emotional content. And so the emotional content for the chanting the holy name is giving in the Shishastika prayers. These are Lord Chaitanya's feelings that are there when he chants. And so that's why, at least my discovery was last year this time, when I took the Kartika Vrata, I had to deal with the holy name for 8 hours hours a day, but I was chanting 64 rounds. Just by Krishna's grace, I discovered this, the Shishastika prayers, and learned them. So much so that before I chanted every 16 rounds, I would chant the prayers, and then learn them well enough so that just by saying the Sanskrit, I understand what they mean. The other thing that I discovered in this Vajrayana, which is a further, it's a sequel to the Harinam Chintamani, actually. It's also about chanting the holy name. And so here, and it's a meditation on the each verse of the Shishastika prayers. There are 8 chapters. And they're also lined up with one of the watches of the day, the the 3-hour sections of the day, the yamas, or the Astikalia, Leela of Krishna. So anyway, he says, I'm going to just read you what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. In the 16-word Hare Krishna mantra, there are 8 pairs of names. Corresponding to these 8 pairs, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recited the 8 shlokas in the Shishastika. Now, isn't that far out? Corresponding to the 8 pairs of names, each one of the pairs is one of the... So then he says, he spells it out, the first pair of names, Hare Krishna, signifies the sudur of ignorance and the performance of non-sankirtan with faith. The second pair, Hare Krishna, means Krishna's names are invested with all potencies. One should have attachment for bhajan by taking shelter of the holy names in the association of sadhus. Gradually by performing bhajan, anarthas, unwanted contaminations are destroyed. As anarthas are removed, nishtha, firm faith, develops. The third pair, Krishna Krishna, indicates the company of pure devotees and becoming fixed in firm faith throughout the day and night, sadhu, all day and all night. And notice again the company of pure devotees. In other words, if we have these qualities, we can associate very nicely with the devotees, those 4 qualities. I'll continue reading the whole thing. By the fourth pair, Hari Hari, unmotivated devotional service is awakened, along with the taste for non-sankirtan, Nadamana Janam Sundari. That indicates the stage of ruchi, or actual taste for the activities of devotional service. The fifth pair, Hari Rama, represents the taste for pure service along with the remembrance of the holy names as described in the Shishastika. This stage, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this Ayinanda Tatuja Kinkaram Bhakitam Nam Vishnu, this indicates this is the stage of asakti. Ruchi is a taste for the activities of devotional service. You'd rather chant Hare Krishna than see the next episode of Star Wars or whatever your thing is. If you have the choice, you don't have to even preach to yourself, you know. Right, you're not there yet. Huh? the ruchi is a taste for the activities of devotional service. So ruchi has devotional service as its object, but asakti has Krishna as its object. And asakti is heavier than taste. Asakti, one of the definitions of asakti in the dictionary, is addiction. So one becomes addicted to Krishna. Not only addicted to Krishna, but addicted to Krishna in some particular lila or age that you become very attached to. And out of the attraction to that form, one's spiritual identity develops in response to that. So the first clue to one's spiritual identification is revealed at the stage of asakti. So that's Harirama. Then, or Ayi Nanda Panuja, because you're asking, fix me up now, please consider me among the dust motes, or the motes on your feet that you want me now in your constitutional position. And then in the sixth there, the second Harirama, chanted in the beginning stage of transcendental emotion, this is Bhava. Nayanam Galadashi Daya, your eyes now move my eyes because of absorption in the name, my eyes flood with tears and my voice become choked and my skin erupts in goosebumps. That's Hari Rama, second Hari Rama. Leads to material detachment and complete attachment to Krishna. The seventh there, Rama Rama, awakens attachment for the mellow of conjugal rasa, the shelter of Radharani's lotus feet, and the feeling of separation. Particularly now, the last two prayers are both about prema, but the one is in the stage of separation, the pralambha. Yugayi kamini nishena, saptisha pravishaya kam. Then finally, the eighth there, Hari Hari, leads to attainment of the goal of life, loving service to Radha and Krishna, following the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan throughout the eight divisions of the night. Sambhoga, he calls it Sambhoga in his book, which means conjugal union. So here each pair of names is associated with one of these verses. So what I discovered, that if I really steeped my mind in these verses, I could actually chant the Hare Krishna mantra and at the same time go to be reminded of each of the verses. Which actually didn't distract. See, I have me from the Hare Krishna mantra. Because the way they're the same thing. When it indicates this, that means the same thing. So if you're like me, because I'm a middle speculator by long habit, the hard thing for me to do is to concentrate on the holy name of the Lord and not to have my mind go off into various thoughts. But if I've been contemplating the Shishastika prayers and sort of make that the mental environment in which the chanting takes place, then while I'm chanting, I can also keep the Shishastika prayers in mind, and sometimes then when one chants, you start to go through changes, and things will happen, like the word Durdaiva will pop into the head, and suddenly you start to feel some remorse and some lamentation. Or you're chanting Hare Krishna and you think Ayi Nanda Tanuja. Oh, wow, then you get that Lord Chaitanya's Ayi, You start to get some sense, at least for myself, start to get some sense of the feeling that goes into this chanting. So even though you have two words, Hari Hari, what's in it? Is one of the whole Shishastika prayers or Hari Rama. So people think the holy name as being somehow or other pretty simple and repetitive. It's actually quite it opens up, and I think the way the holy name begins to open up is by taking advantage of the Shishastika prayers. which are instructions on how to chant. Now, if we take them very seriously, then we will make progress. And there's something, even though we may be at a certain stage of advancement on the Shraddha Prema thing, still all the prayers are actually relevant at every stage. It's not that any of them become obsolete if you've progressed beyond that stage, or that the ones that are further off are not relevant. Because, for example, if you start to regret your inability to see Krishna, then the prayer Shunyayitam Jagat Sarvam also has relevance at that stage too. You can start to miss Krishna. There's a great deal of something to be said for certain even Western thinkers, and in their writings, although they may even be atheists or not especially explicitly theistic people, what pervades their writings is a very palpable ache of the absence of God. Franz Kafka's like this, very definitely. It's very vividly there. There's this strong ache of the absence of God. One should feel that absence very, very strongly. So this is the way that, at least for me, I found this way to combine this chanting with the Shishastra prayers. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur does this amazing thing that he's saying. Each pair of names corresponds with one of the shlokas, like that. So by chanting the shloka, you can also go through the whole Shishastra. Any questions, comments? Yeah? 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 Mm-hmm. He needs the microphone. Insanity to be proud. Yeah, I mean, pride means that I take myself as being greater important. Is that sane or not? You know, the typical thing is the guy in the mental hospital thinks he's Jesus Christ. Or, you know. So that's such a kind of madness. Yeah, it is. Pride is definitely insanity.
Four things in that list.
a natural weakness and humility because of his complete detachment from matter. A pure compassion unencumbered by envy or enmity, you can say. Then the third is a spotless heart, free from mundane, false prestige, and a respectful attitude towards everyone. So this, by the way, is also a prayer. Kirtaniya Sadahari, one can chant this or chant the holy names in the mood of this. See, the whole mantra can be chanted in the mood of any one or any several of these slogans. And so here, Kirtaniya Sadahari, one is chanting or begging to please give me the qualities so I can chant the holy name of the Lord continuously. So you can pray, please give me natural meekness and humility. And you can think it's so horrible that I'm puffed up, I've got no reason, I can understand and not my body, and so on. So one can please free me from this illusion. I'm carrying around this huge. And I think of the false ego as a kind of, it's like an armored car or a tank that you have to drive around in. And it's broken down, it's rusty, it's heavy, it stinks. It requires a lot of gas. You make it all the time. It's very slow, it's very clumsy. If you got out and walked, you'd make a lot better time. But you think you need this big, huge, clunky piece of machinery just to make a formidable impression upon somebody. Absolutely unnecessary. And somehow or other, we're into it. Please divest me of this piece of, you know, rusted, broken down garbage. That's my false ego. Absolutely unnecessary. And actually, I think when we realize the unnecessariness of a false ego, it's such a relief. Actually, you find, wow, you know, lay your burden down. It's freedom. And being meek and humble, you know, we've been spending so long, you know, trying not to be meek and humble because we're afraid it'll put us at a competitive disadvantage in the struggle for existence. See, that's the other part of the illusion, is the illusory struggle for existence of the material world. We've been involved in that struggle. So the struggle is an illusion. There's no need to struggle for existence. We've already got it. And in any way, if we want to keep our body we want to survive on the bodily level, we've declared war on time and on material nature, and this is a battle we're sure to lose. There's no winning this one. When I a lot of times I go to university, I try to convince young Christian people about the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease. They're quite skeptical. They don't believe it's going to happen to them, you know? There's a word for this, it's called narcissism. That I'm so special. Somehow or other. Anyway, they're like that. And so I say to them, I said, if you actually want to be happy in this world, my first advice is to you, don't grow any older. Don't grow old. Just stop right now. If you can't do that, you've got problems. You can't solve. So people have done this. They engage in this illusory thing. They think we have to defend ourselves. We have to make an impression upon others. We have to rise in the hierarchy. And so we acquire this big piece of clunky, obsolete military equipment that we're riding around in. And it's absolutely unnecessary. And it's such a relief to get rid of it. That's really, really, really good. You think you get rid of it, but it tends to creep back in the back door. You have to be vigilant. All the time. But happening, just, we have to visit somebody. It's unnecessary. Unwanted thing. Doesn't help us. Krishna helps us. Part of this is also having faith, being confident of Krishna's protection. So we don't have to defend ourselves. Krishna will do a better job than we can do. What else? Anything else? Yeah. You don't want to hang on to unwanted things. Unwanted things means that you may recognize these attachments and desires in me. You should recognize them, and you should beg Krishna to remove them. See, this is also an offense against the holy name to maintain material attachments or desires. You notice it's not an offense to have them. I mean, it's not good to have them, but that to have them is not an offense against the holy name. The offense against the holy name is to maintain them. So, see, one has to, you see, getting free of material desires and attachments, in one sense, is no big problem. Because we don't destroy them. We don't have to get rid of them. Krishna gets rid of them. That's the prayer. That's why I like this prayer that Prahlad Maharaj makes to Nrisingadev. Please appear in my heart, and with your nails and your teeth, like lightning bolts, and destroy utterly my desire to enjoy in this material world. So Prabhupada says we should pray every day to Nrisinga to appear in our hearts and destroy our Hiranyakashipu-like material desires. We should pray by here Nrisinga Hridaye Nrisinga. So we're doing it actually. Hridaye Nrisinga, we want Lord Nrisingadev to appear in our hearts and destroy our material desires, which are like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu is big and formidable, bigger and more formidable than I am, but I don't have to destroy him. Nrisingadev destroys him. Actually, it's no problem. Between our material desires and Krishna, Krishna is infinitely more powerful. Then the question is, why doesn't he do it? I know why he doesn't do it, because we're praying, Krishna, please destroy all my material desires, but in 15 years. Or Krishna, please destroy my material desires, except for this one. That's the problem. So one has to understand that these material desires are really the source of my suffering. And I have to trust Krishna it's not necessary. He'll take care of me. There was one devotee in one of the temples on GBC floor, nice kid, a brahmachari, and he used to go and dress the deities every morning, and he had that, cassette tape on strapped to the side and earphones, and Everybody thought he was listening to... What he was listening to was motivational tapes. Some motivational guru who was actually telling people that the way they can fulfill their desires is by wanting it bad enough. And he was psyching people up to want them more and more and more. And he's doing this while he's dressing the deities, you know, and I'm not done. So when I found out about this, I had to have a talk with this guy. He was a nice, simple devotee, actually, kind of, you know. So I had a long discussion. First of all, this is not appropriate to listen to these things. And second of all, you know, our philosophy is that basically you should not increase your desires, but actually trust that Krishna will fulfill them. And so we were in our car driving together, so I had a long time to discuss with him how, you know, that Krishna will satisfy you 100%. The faith means that if I get Krishna consciousness, I will be satisfied in every department. Krishna will satisfy my desires better than I can ever satisfy myself. My true desires. Now, right now, my actual desires are sometimes reflected in the material energy in the wrong way. And when I try to satisfy the reflection, I remain unsatisfied. But Krishna knows my real desires in my heart. And when I'm satisfied by Krishna, full satisfaction, no problem, don't even have to think about it. So I explain all this to them. You should have faith. You know? You should not maintain these desires. His response was, he says, yeah, he says, I know you're right, but still, he says, I don't want to be poor like you.
Oh, my God.
After all that. You know, he wanted to make money. Of course he wanted to make money and use it in Krishna's service, but still, he didn't want to be poor. I said, well, you know, I don't mind it. You know? I mean, if Krishna will take care of you, you know what? Anyway, you have to trust Krishna. He knows what's best. Yeah. Sometimes trying to preach is a thankless task. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, right. So anyway, this is the main point is that when we see our desires, we should just be actually begging Krishna with some intensity, please get rid of them. Even if I think I need this, I know better, still please get rid of it. On some level, I have to want to get rid of it and ask Krishna to do it. Please make me understand that this is an anartha, even if I can't understand it very well.